a journey now and come with us, won't you, down a not-so-lazy river. The River Indus flows the entire length of the nation of Pakistan, entering from the north in Baltistan, finally merging in the Arabian Sea near Karachi.
It sustains life for hundreds of thousands of Pakistanis, but as we saw last month, it also has the power to destroy them. The river is so important to the country that it has its own annual celebration when locals throw vivid pink petals into the water as a mark of respect.
But since the floods, it's been more physical scars left on the country, unprecedented physical scars and mental distress. The flood has affected communities all over the nation. It's Pakistan's worst ever natural disaster. What's life there now? This week, Aleem Maqbool, working for our partner, the BBC, has been reporting from various points along the river.
We are in northwest Pakistan. We're really as far north as we can go before all the roads seem to end. In this valley in the northwest, every single bridge, over 20 of them, was washed away when those floods came. Huge concrete structures, some of them, that were totally washed away. And that has left thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, stranded on the other side. There are around 300,000 people in this part of Pakistan, that's a UN estimate, who are in that position, who can only be reached by helicopter, or as where I am now, where a bridge has been taken out, where there is a rather rickety cable car.
And that cable car represents remarkable ingenuity. It's a makeshift device powered by a wire attached to a flywheel that's attached to the axle of an old car. It is a lifeline, and here's why.
There are over 300 bridges that have been washed away or damaged, of which at least 150 are reinforced concrete structures. So there is no comparison.
That's Usman Mumtaz, a road engineer, and he's in the Swat Valley of Pakistan, which has some of the most dramatic scenery in the country and also some of the worst damage from the flooding.
Mohammed Rehman just returned to the Swat Valley after the flood to find nothing.
We went all from here, from Swat, you know, to different places. And then we finally came back to our houses. I mean, there's no hotels, there's no roads, there's no bridges. There's a lot of problems right here.
Day two of the tour on down the Indus, and we're further south in Charsada. It's a town about 20 miles east of Peshawar. And that's when the BBC's Aleem Maqbool, 6 weeks ago, found people who at one point were wading waist-high in mud and water. Drier now, but the conditions there still desperate.
And Aleem Maqbool found that in this part of the country, NGOs and government agencies aren't giving those affected people what they need, but some groups affiliated with radical Islam are filling the void.
These are doctors who've had medicines out. They've been seeing patients all day. But this is a group that's affiliated to an Islamist organization. In fact, it is to a banned group, Jamaat al-Dawah. But a lot of people here are saying they don't worry about that. They need help from whatever source they can get it.
And here's why such organizations are so popular. Niaz Muhammad lost his home in the flood, and he now lives in a tent with his family. Little more than a few blankets and a copy of the Quran inside, and he says he's being ignored.
We see them driving past this area without helping us. I've stood in the road to stop them, and they have told me they would come back, but they never do.
Niaz Muhammad there expressing cynicism about the government, one of the 20 million Pakistanis who lost their homes last month, a flood rearranging the landscape of Pakistan also. Changing the political map as well. Aleem Maqbool's journey continues. We'll check in with him later in the week.